Good morning, and welcome to the Foreign Affairs Podcast. Today we will be introducing four members of the Foreign Affairs Committee: Brad Sherman, Karen Bass, Michael McCall, and Ileana Rose Lantanen. We will be discussing important issues such as the current and recent issues of the government shutdown and the newly appointed members to the committee. Before we begin, I would like to thank our sponsor for today, Audible. I've actually been listening to the new Donald Trump book, Fear, and it's been very good so far. If you didn't know, Audible is the leading online provider of audiobooks. They have over 180,000 audiobooks to choose from of all genres. If you click on the link in the description bar or at www.audible.com/foreignaffairs, you can get one free audiobook. The Foreign Affairs Committee started on November 29, 1775, when the Continental Congress decided to create a committee to allow the United States to better their relationships with other parts of the world. This was the first committee to represent our country in any other parts of the world. The Foreign Affairs Committee was originally used to enter communication with Europe to obtain any information that would be useful in the struggle with England at this time. 10 years after the War of 1812, the modern Committee of Foreign Affairs was created by several members of Congress. Throughout all of the years of this committee, there have been many influential figures that have been a part of it, like the two American presidents who have served on it, which are James K. Polk and John Quincy Adams.
Hi, my name is Karen Bass, and I'm going to start with what I was doing before Congress. Before serving in Congress, I was elected to be the 67th speaker by the California Assembly, which put me into the position as being the first African-American woman in U.S. history to serve in this powerful state legislative role. While I served as speaker during this time, I also took on efforts to improve foster care and quality health care for Californians. I was just recently elected into my fifth term representing the 37th Congressional District in November 2018. In my last term, I was able to do two things that I felt very passionate about. One was reforming America's foster care system, and the other was strengthening the United States' relationship with Africa. I currently serve on the House Committee on Foreign Affairs, where I am ranking member of the Subcommittee on Africa, Global Health, Global Human Rights, and International Organizations.
Hi, I'm Brad Sherman, a liberal representative for the state of California. I have been serving the House of Representatives since 1997 as a member of the Democratic Party. During the 22 years that I have been a House representative, I have represented the 24th, 27th, and now the 30th District. I have a background in political science and economics and attended Harvard Law School as well as the University of California, Los Angeles. Before serving in the House of Representatives, I was the chairman on the California State Board of Equalization from 1991 to 1995. In the Foreign Affairs Committee, I serve as a ranking member on both the Subcommittee of Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade, as well as the Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific.
Hello, I'm Michael McCall, and I have been serving as the U.S. Representative for Texas' 10th Congressional District since 2005. Since the beginning of the 113th Congress, I have been the Chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security. I'm also a member of the Republican Party, and recently I was appointed as Senior Member of the GOP on the House Foreign Affairs Committee.
This is Michael McCall, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about our committee. Our official name is the United States House Committee on Foreign Affairs, and we are a standing committee of the United States House of Representatives. Definitely don't want to get us confused with the Committee on Foreign Relations. We are different. As of 2019, January, Pacific Elliot Engel of New York has been the chairman of our committee, and we do things like overseeing anything that has to do with other countries, so anything that doesn't concern just America. There's six standing subcommittees within, you know, the overall committee. So first we have the Terrorism, Non-Proliferation, and Trade Committee, and then the other five are regional. So, for example, we have the Subcommittee on Africa, and the Subcommittee of Asia and the Pacific, and these focus on just those regions.
Hi, my name is Joe Wilson. I'm 71 years old. I'm a Republican member of the House and a senior member of the Congressional Foreign Affairs Committee. I'm representative from the 2nd Congressional District of South Carolina, and I was a member of the Senate from 1985 to 2001, but since then I've been serving in the House.
What is your opinion on the government shutdown? How does this affect you, your committee, and your work? Who do you believe is at fault?
In my opinion, the government shutdown was easily avoidable and could have been circumvented had Trump not pushed for funding for his border wall that will ultimately prove ineffective. This shutdown has directly affected many of my constituents by withholding their pay and even forcing them to get side jobs just to pay their bills. I fully believe that Trump and the Republicans are at fault for the shutdown and should be blamed for any negative effects of it. This shutdown has had many effects internationally, which can be seen by looking at the global economy and immigration. And as a ranking member on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, I believe it is my job to advocate for the end of this shutdown.
I am Karen Bass, and I do not believe that there is one valid reason for the shutdown, and I want to apologize to those suffering because of the shutdown. There was an agreement to a budget on the wall with Donald Trump, and he was intimidated by two radio talk show hosts that made him back away from the deal. Even if we were to give him $25 billion, the wall could not be built. That land would have to go through eminent domain. It's not land just sitting there. But because Donald Trump can't come to an agreement, I believe that it is him at fault. The ironic thing is, the reason he initiated this government shutdown is to get border security. Yet there are TSA agents who aren't getting paid, and these are the people that are supposed to keep us safe. Also, with the government shutdown, the Foreign Affairs Committee I am a part of will not receive enough money for a recent bill that was passed. However, my concern is for the people and the 800,000 federal workers who won't be getting their paycheck.
I would say that I'm upset about this whole ordeal, taking into account that a great deal of it is due to the stubbornness of other members of the government. I think people from both sides need to work together in order to do what is best for the country. Right now, it's necessary to acknowledge or address the threats we are receiving. Currently, we need a few things to end the security and humanitarian crisis taking place at our southern border, and that is constructing barriers, providing the latest technology, authorizing more boots on the ground, and closing the legal loopholes in our current immigration system. This government shutdown has gone on long enough, and despite all the rhetoric, Democrats have not offered a serious alternative regarding their vision for border security. In fact, instead of negotiating a solution, Speaker Pelosi is more interested in undermining the traditions of our great nation and preventing the president from delivering his State of the Union speech. This shutdown affects my committee because there has already been a bill passed regarding foreign affairs, and with the shutdown, there isn't enough funding for it, so it could really mess things up.
I think the government shutdown definitely is a predicament. I feel sympathetic to those employees that suffer losses, such as missed paychecks due to the shutdown, though at the end of the day, I do support Trump's building of the wall and believe it will improve border security and other overall safety in this country. Even though I do support such construction, it concerns me because it may take away from our committee. The building of the wall may cause Trump's administration to take away from funding that goes towards the United Nations and moving away from international treaties. In the long run, the government will save a lot more money in spending if we keep funding the United Nations, since peacekeeping will actually cost less than paying for soldiers to go into war when a conflict arrives. I also honestly believe no one is certain at fault for the government shutdown. We are just in need of more productive and collaborative legislation as a whole.
Well, Joe, a border wall may not solve all of these problems. It may even add more issues than there were to begin with. For the past 30 years, illegal immigration has admittedly been an issue for the U.S., and it hasn't been proven that a border wall will do anything to stop this. With that lack of evidence, $5 billion seems like a lot to give Trump for a project of his that may not even work like it's supposed to. I definitely agree with your statement that a border wall could cause the White House to want to take away funding from international affairs and treaties and move it towards more imminent threats and issues, though.
What are the main roles of the Foreign Affairs Committee for both sides?
In my opinion, the main role of everyone on the Foreign Affairs Committee, regardless of party lines, is to assist those in need in other countries through legislative acts. Additionally, the committee deals with America's relations with other countries and works to assure that peace and treaties are held. Without this committee, America's relationship with other countries would definitely be weaker, and Congress would find it harder to pass and write legislation regarding international affairs without our expertise.
I strongly believe that the U.S. foreign policy has three important roots that provide essential support, which are diplomacy, development, and defense. These provide the nation's ability to effectively leverage U.S. resources. Our committee addresses things like food insecurity, the burden of endemic and epidemic disease, and war and conflict from around the world.
Well, the Foreign Affairs Committee has many duties, which include oversight of legislation regarding foreign policies. For example, we deal with foreign assistance, strategic planning and agreements, international sanctions, and so on. Keeping America diplomatic is important because it ensures we can secure our nation's interests and ties with other countries. The House Foreign Affairs Committee also debates and evaluates bills regarding the impact of the Department of State, the U.S. Agency for International Development, the Peace Corps, the United Nations, the enforcement of the Armed Export Control Act, and the Foreign Assistance Act. It also focuses on the promotion of democracy, peacekeeping, and international development. The reason I think my committee is so important is because we're not only in charge of a great deal of legislation that can help end things like, say, global poverty, but we're also instrumental in ensuring that certain bills reach each chamber's floor for consideration.
The main roles of our committee, regardless of parties, includes maintaining peace and friendly and productive relationships with other countries. As a senior member, I have the privilege and duty to address issues on matters affecting our country's relationship with others. Our committee works a lot with international treaties and addressing humanitarian crises in the ultimate goal to improve living. Like recently, my fellow committee member, Democrat William Keating from Massachusetts, did some committee work with me in Saudi Arabia, making sure they are keeping up with their peace pledge to exclude the idealistic views that lead to terrorism from their textbooks, which was stated in their recent 2019 Saudi Educational Transparency and Reform Act.
And back to our sponsor, Audible.com. If you sign up for a 30-day free trial right now, you can add 2 audiobooks and 2 Audible originals free. After the 30 days, you can get 3 titles each month, 1 audiobook and 2 Audible originals of your choice. We all love Audible here and highly recommend it to everyone. What is your opinion on Ilhan Omar being appointed to the Foreign Affairs Committee? Do you agree with Pelosi's decision to put her on?
I personally admire her and her tenacity, and I agree with all of her viewpoints. I think she will make a very strong addition to this committee. She is helping us create a more diverse Congress that will enable us to accurately represent more demographics and hear more issues. Additionally, her tendency to be outspoken will aid this committee and help us to push legislation and direct attention to certain international affairs and issues. Her recognition and new ideas and background will help us focus our attention to new issues and better the Foreign Affairs Committee in general.
I think Ilhan Omar is a powerful individual who doesn't lack the courage at any rate to get her point of view across. I think it's incredible that she is breaking the mold and adding more diversity to our Congress, especially since she has a lot of views relating to equality and discrimination is still bad to this day. Having strong leaders like Omar, who is doing a great job spreading messages, should be supported, and I can't wait to work with her.
I think it's necessary to mention that there is concern among me and my colleagues regarding Mrs. Omar because, as you know, there have been some issues with things she has tweeted in the past. In 2012, she said that Israel has hypnotized the world. May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel. Now, she claims that this has been totally misinterpreted, but a lot of Jewish Americans were very offended by it. For example, Kevin McCarthy said that it was disgraceful to seat a member who has a documented history of making anti-Semitic and anti-Israel remarks. And then we have Representative Lee Zeldin of New York, who tweeted that instead of the Democrats supporting Israel and combating BDS and anti-Semitism on college campuses and everywhere, they're now empowering it. Nevertheless, I hope that any conflicts you may have will be resolved so that we can keep on working smoothly.
How do you think the differences between the two different parties show in the Foreign Affairs Committee?
I personally feel like the political divide between the Republican and Democratic parties has grown exponentially over time. The parties are practically polarized and unable to hear out the other side's arguments. Within our country, both the left and the right have moved so far to polar ends of the spectrum that it's almost impossible now to create and pass bills that both parties can agree on. As for the dynamic within our own committee, while it may be tense sometimes, we overall are usually able to come up with solutions and analyze different foreign affairs as a cohesive group. With the new Congress in session and the new Congressmen and women in the committee, we have noticed a split along party lines on many different issues that wasn't present before. However, in my opinion, members in both parties are able to cross the aisle and negotiate on most issues to help create and find a solution, and I feel like most of my colleagues would agree. Overall, it's a very interesting dynamic that can be found in a lot of different committees in the House and Senate.
What is your overall view on the current events taking place between Venezuela and the United States?
While I do acknowledge that there is an internal conflict that is currently occurring in Venezuela, I strongly believe and advocate that any American intervention in the country will quite frankly prove dangerous and unnecessary. That country is currently experiencing a very unstable political scene right now, and such an application of American outside force could turn the conflict to an international issue and place a burden on the government and citizens of America.
Venezuela is facing a humanitarian crisis resulting in millions of refugees being displaced and a country in economic ruin. I do believe Maduro is partly to blame for the country's crisis. I agree with Elizabeth Warren, who said, word for word, the Venezuelan people deserve free and fair elections, an economy that works, and the ability to live without fear of violence from their own government. This is why I support Donald Trump's decision to endorse Guaido. I believe that Maduro has had his chance, and it is time to let someone new and convincingly better at listening to the people to take the reins. As far as the U.S. taking a step forward to helping Venezuela, I agree with using economic sanctions to put much more pressure on Maduro, but I do not believe that we should go as far as to send troops over to remove Maduro, because the Venezuelan people must demand true democracy on their own and decide their own future.
Gone on for way too long, the Venezuelan military really needs to stand with the people and help them facilitate a peaceful transition of power. It's time for the socialist nightmare of Nicolas Maduro to come to an end. You know, this is just, it's completely wrong, it's undemocratic, it's legal, and the situation's getting really serious. Just last Wednesday, 700 people were arrested, which according to the UN Human Rights Office is the most arrests in a single day in the last two decades, so I think that really speaks for how dire the situation is, and I'm glad that America is doing what it can to help, because, you know, it's kind of a delicate situation, and I think the sanctions are gonna help the rightful person come back to power.
Next week on the Foreign Affairs Podcast, we will be talking about the continuation or end of the government shutdown. We will also be talking about the Venezuela and United States conflict and what current news has been released about that. And finally, we will be talking about any new members appointed to the Foreign Affairs Committee, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, and how our members feel about these people being on our committee. Thank you for listening.